Hi, everybody. This is Science Modeling Talks, the podcast that features top modeling instructors and thought leaders sharing ideas. I'm your host, Mark Royce. Remember to visit sciencemodelingtalks.com to access extra content related to our interviews and to learn more about our guests. While you're there, share your thoughts and comments by clicking the link that says, "Tell us what you think." We really want to hear from you. Okay, let's get started with today's episode. My guest for this episode is Paul Sasso. Paul came to teaching from a career in engineering with Motorola, Siemens, and General Dynamics. He's now a high school science teacher in Topsham, Maine, and has been teaching for 13 years. He was introduced to modeling in 2017 when he took his first workshop in physics mechanics. He's taught all levels of physics and more recently started teaching astronomy. Paul directs the STEM marker space at his school, which is a hub for 3D printing and robotics, supporting student projects school-wide. Restoring old VWs, remote camping, stargazing, photography, and keeping up with his wife keep Paul busy the rest of his time. Here's my interview with Paul. Well, hi, Paul. How are you doing?
Hey, Mark. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. I'm glad you're able to take the time to spend with us. It's really cool, and I'm looking forward to hearing more about your adventures in modeling, and I know our listeners are looking forward to it as well. So let's just dig in here. First of all, let me ask you, in your bio, I saw that you came from engineering into teaching. What caused that change to happen?
Originally had gone and studied physics in college, and I was sort of a late bloomer, so I didn't go to college until my late 20s. Went to school, studied physics, and a little bit of engineering. And then when I got out of school, was planning to teach high school. That was what I wanted to do. And it was in the tech boom, and there were lots of opportunities. So I ended up taking an engineering job. Actually, it was a production job with Motorola at first. And one thing led to another. Ended up staying with that for a while and just sort of staying in the engineering track. Obviously, the money was, at that time, was better than teaching. And so it was a little hard to jump ship. And then I just reached a point where the kids were grown or grown enough and cut ties and went and got my teaching certification and got into high school teaching. Yeah.
That's cool. So you kind of came back to your original intent. That's really neat.
Yes, I did. I don't regret it one bit.
And then you somehow discovered modeling. What led you down that path?
My first teaching job, believe it or not, was I was a substitute. I started subbing at a local high school, and there was an opening that became available for a physics teacher, and I had only substitute taught a couple of days in a biology class and in a freshman science class, and so within about 2 weeks, I found myself standing in front of taking over for a teacher that taught honors physics, conceptual physics, and an environmental class. And I literally had just started taking my teaching classes, my certification courses. So my start, the only thing I knew to do how to do was sort of fall back on what I remember from college, so I began to kind of administer my classes that way. Very, very traditional. Where's the book? What's the book? Follow the book. And then it wasn't until a couple of years later that I ended up with having a permanent position, and then my department head was a modeler or knew about it. I'm not sure how many workshops he took, but he suggested that I might want to take this the modeling workshops that were done here in Maine down in Kennebunk, and so that was sort of my first. Of course, I quickly did the research and looked, kind of tried to discover what modeling was, what it was all about. I had no idea what it was about, and immediately became very interested in it, took the workshop that summer with another teacher from the school. He was in the biology workshop, and I was in the physics mechanics workshop, And just remember, just really loving it. And it just sort of clicked. There was a click.
That's cool. Who was your workshop leader?
So the workshops in Maine were run by Jamie Vasenka, and he's a physics professor at University of New England. But the my workshop leader was Shannon McLaughlin. I still to this day have my notebook from the workshop in my classroom, and I'm still opening it up every now and then, going, oh, how did he start that lab, or how did he start that activity? And I still refer to it. So
wow. Modeling workshops started out primarily focused on the physics discipline, and other disciplines have been added along. And I know that one of the more recent ones is astronomy modeling. Mm-hmm. So I know you've been recently started teaching it. When did you start teaching astronomy? And then how did you get connected with that? You know, what caused you to go into the astronomy thing?
Well, I was, after my modeling in physics, I was mostly teaching physics. I was teaching actually all three levels at our school. And then somewhere around 2021, I guess it was 2020, with the end, that 2021, 22 school year, one of the teachers at our school was looking to offload an elective that he was teaching, and he had been teaching, we had an astronomy elective, and he'd been teaching that for some years, and he was ready to pass it on and let somebody else take it, and so I raised my hand, which I wasn't quite sure at the time that I should have done that, because I had never taught astronomy, and I knew a little bit of backyard astronomy, and that was it. So, but I took that on, and that was the fall of 21, and the first astronomy with exoplanets modeling workshop taught by Colleen and Dan Peluso. That was in the spring of 2022. So I managed to get through that first semester based on the old curriculum that I inherited, which was very standardized. It was very Starry Night driven, online simulator and worksheets. And so I saw that there was a modeling workshop. The astronomy modeling workshop was available, signed up for it. That was my introduction to Colleen, whom you know and whom everyone knows, I'm sure, in the modeling world. And Dan Peluso, who's been on the modeling talks as well.
Yeah.
So I was there as a student. And, you know, instantly transformed my class that I was currently teaching, because here I had in front of me the resources that they produced and that you acquire during the course. It's just incredible. So I immediately started incorporating. I would get something on Thursday night in our 3-hour workshop, and then I would be doing it on Friday, you know, trying some of it with my kids on Friday. So for me, not really having the resources and kind of stumbling along at first, that was just the gates were opened up, and I was just like, oh my gosh, thank you, I have all this, and it was really great hands-on stuff, and it was so modeling oriented that it was a good fit. I kind of had that in my teaching psyche already, and it was great. It was. It was definitely definitely life-changing for my astronomy stress levels and teaching levels. And again, I was learning it at the same time, because I really did not know much about astronomy. So
okay.
I really was learning it and then rolling it out the next day or the next week with students. So it was pretty exciting. It was a little exhausting, but it was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's really neat. So I assume that you would recommend that if there are people who are looking at teaching astronomy or who are teaching astronomy, that they would get connected with the modeling workshop for astronomy.
Yes, definitely. We so the next year, and I developed, and with Dan, I developed a bit of a relationship with Dan. in his modeling talk, he talks about his citizen science network and the work that he's done with Unistellar in creating use of their telescopes, their digital telescopes. And yeah. so during that first class, and Dan was working on his PhD at the time, and we used my students to take some of his survey data. So I administered, you know, pre and post surveys with my kids. He helped me get a telescope, actually, for that a loaner telescope, a digital telescope to use with my students. And we went all the way down the road and did a exoplanet observed an exoplanet transit and did some real citizen science. So Dan was great. He helped me along the way. We actually ended up having a couple of I would leverage him from time to time. We would have some one-on-one Zooms, and he would help me build curriculum and help me build up activities for the students. So
I remember Dan talking about, like, if I remember correctly, it was like crowdsourcing discovery and from all of the different schools that were employing these digital telescopes and aggregating together the information that was being discovered and actually getting it published.
Correct.
And participating to. Have you been involved with some of that?
The data that we collected ended up not being the best set of data, but it was. You would take everyone would observe the same exoplanet transit, different places, multiple telescopes. The data would all converge into Unistellar's servers, and they would aggregate all the data, put it all together, and try to build a light curve from the transit. And then Dan did use that data in a paper that he published, and in that paper were many, many, many high school students. So you can imagine these high school kids having, you know, their names mentioned as contributors, you know, in a scientific paper.
That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. So we did that on a smaller scale, but I believe he did use my kids did surveys for him. There were a couple of them on, you know, just sort of their knowledge of astronomy, sort of a pretest. What do you know? And then at the end of the semester, we did an exit survey of the same. And there was also another survey that asked them about just their interests in space science and their career interests and their attitudes, student attitudes. And so I think he used that data that went into his paper, into his PhD as well, on surveying high school students. So it was a fun ride. And then after that, after the first year, I raised my hand. They were looking for folks that might want to help out the next year. So the 2023 class, I became a very old intern and was able to, and there were a couple of us, was able to essentially take the class but help out a little bit. There was a covert activity, so nobody knew that I was an intern. So I came into the class and joined lots of the groups and a lot of the breakout sessions as a student and helped out a little bit. And then I took the course again as an intern, and then that summer, which was am I getting my dates mixed up now? The summer of 2023, right? I went out was invited to ASU to participate in the workshop leader workshop.
Cool.
That they have, and so that was a week in Tempe, and with a bunch of other modelers, which was awesome, and we were all trained to be to lead workshops, and it was great fun. The week was with Colleen and Larry Dukerich, and they were our leaders for that workshop. And at the time, there were other workshops going on in the same science building. I don't remember the name of it, But there were, you know, computational modeling workshops going on, electricity and magnetism, mechanics. And so as workshop trainees, we were able to sort of go in and observe actual workshops that were happening, even if they were out of disciplines that we normally did. And we got to meet, well, Jane Jackson was there. We got to meet Jane. We got to meet, and I always pronounce his name, David Hestenis.
Yeah.
Hestenis. I always pronounce that, I think, Hestenis, the founding father. Mm-hmm. We went to a little mixer at a local brewery, and there were other founding modelers there. Swackhammer, all the people that I had been reading over the years, reading their original papers and their publications, so it was really pretty crazy to get to meet some of them and sort of thank them and have a beer with them. That was a lot of fun.
You're gearing up then to actually lead some workshops in the future?
So currently, right now, so this 2024 version of Astronomy Modeling with Exoplanets, it started in January, and so I am co-teaching that now with Dan Peluso. So Colleen, cool. Colleen gets a semester off. She's gracefully, as I told you, she's been drawing me in slowly, so she's gracefully stepped aside and had me trained up so that Dan and I are now co-teaching that class. So we're about halfway through it. It goes until the first week of May. It's Thursday nights, 3 hours. Eastern, 7 to 10 Eastern time. We've got about 14 students.
Awesome.
And you know, the crazy thing is that some of these teachers that are in the workshop now have way more astronomy knowledge than I do. You know, there are people that have been teaching astronomy for a long time. But I believe the course has so much to offer in just the different approach to it and the use of real data and the use of very current, real relevant data science activities for the kids, so for the students. So it's been there's a lot to be had, a lot to be taken away from it, no matter what your level, I think.
So are you only teaching astronomy now, or are you still also teaching physics courses?
No, so I'm currently teaching. I currently, at my school, I teach three levels of physics, and I teach a semester. So I've taken this astronomy modeling with the exoplanets, and Dan and I both at our schools, he's teaching at a high school as well, mm-hmm. in California. We call it modern astronomy, currently in my school, I teach a foundations levels physics course, which is for kids that are, you know, they're not the most jazzed on science and their math skills are maybe a little bit lower. So it's very super conceptual course. I teach an academic level course, which is sort of that college bound students that not necessarily STEM. Destined for a STEM career, but certainly still want to take a full, you know, 4 years of science in high school, but are college bound generally, mm-hmm. or community college bound. And then I teach an advanced class, which is a concurrent enrollment class with our local community college. Mm. And so that's that's pretty rigorous. It's not calculus based; it's still algebra based. But for the kids that definitely know where they want to go for a science or engineering. After high school, so
yeah,
and then the astronomy class. Then I have my astronomy course.
Sure, yeah.
So it's a dream job.
That's great, man. So let me ask you: employing modeling techniques in an astronomy classroom versus in a physics classroom, what are the differences? I mean, do you employ basically the same kind of approach, or are there differences between the way you approach the classroom with modeling?
Yeah, I think at the very high level, they're the same. One of the things that that piqued my interest with the astronomy, that there's a certain nuanced approach to modeling with the astronomy. You still start with a, you know, a sort of an introductory or what they call, you know, a paradigm activity that, you know, with demonstration and asking questions. And the astronomy, the next steps in building the model with the astronomy course, they just, they're, I won't say they're more engaging, but they employ a little bit more of the real world, because all of a sudden we're using, we might be using a bit of software and doing photometry with, you know, real images of celestial objects, or so there's a I'm trying to think of the right, you know, the right word. And I don't want to indicate that like physics modeling is in any way less exciting, but it's you're still working, you're still, you know, you're still like running carts down tracks and doing experiments with friction and looking at other phenomena where it might not be the most exciting stuff for kids to see in a classroom, but it's good solid physics. And with the astronomy, there's a little bit more, I don't know, a little more, you get a little more awe out of the kids, because you can, you're talking about big things. You're talking about light years, and you're talking about images that are just so huge and so far away, and just kind of a little bit more mind blowing. So,
more wonder.
Yeah, it kind of, it kind of sticks a little more, I think, with the students. So. But I would say it is a little bit more difficult, and in other ways. And you do, in the astronomy piece, I think all of us as modelers, we try to stay in that modeling trajectory all the way through a particular lesson or unit or topic. But there are times when we come out of it and we maybe are a little bit more prescriptive, or we are a little less Socratic. Because sometimes you just need to get a message across. You know, sometimes you just need to, you need to get into the lecture mode a little bit. So I know we all probably go back and forth. And I would say in the astronomy, sometimes there are some parts of it that you lapse into the more of a prescriptive mode. And sometimes it's nice just to build an activity for the kids. And Dan Peluso has done a lot with this. He's built some really great activities, and so they tend to come out of the modeling model a little bit more than you'd like to at times, but it seems kind of necessary, because there just needs to be a little bit of practice, a little bit of this is how you do this, because some of the tools we're using are tools that the students haven't used before. Mm-hmm. and are actually, you know, tools that real astronomers use. In terms of analyzing images and robotic telescopes and requesting images and things like that, so some differences for sure.
So for schools that are teaching astronomy, and especially if they're using the modeling approach, is there like an investment of equipment and stuff that becomes involved, you know, with having to procure some funding or
not? Not to start. You certainly don't need it to start. I was able to use everything in my physics classroom, plus a few things here and there, to get started with it. And so nothing is super high dollar. Nothing is in order to get started. Cool. You can certainly. There are different, you know, pieces of equipment, and you can build class sets of different setups for celestial spheres and other demonstration devices. You can certainly do that, and there's lots of information in the curriculum resources. The other thing that Dan and Colleen did initially was they developed so much, and, you know, piggybacking, I think, off of the original astronomy workshop that was done in 2019, they built this just massive collection of resources, both digital and then in those digital resources, the ability to acquire different types of pieces of equipment, construct different types of pieces of equipment for yourself, for your classroom. The ultimate sort of expense or the largest expense that you could be driven to is our telescopes.
Oh, sure.
And the as I said earlier, I had a Dan allowed facilitated my borrowing a Unistellar EV scope for my classroom the first semester, and the last couple of years I've been working with someone in my district, and just recently was able to order two brand new Unistellar Odyssey scopes, digital telescopes for my classroom. Which is huge. So this will get us using the telescopes. Going to put together a program where kids can check out the telescopes. They might be able to take a telescope once they pass a little training class that I'll put together. They'll be able to take a telescope home for the weekend and do some of their own observing. And we have a couple of other students that are interested in doing some independent study. So we're hoping to get those kids going on one of the citizen science projects with Unistellar. So that's a big expense. They're not inexpensive. Unistellar, the company, has been great. Dan facilitated getting us a little bit of an educational discount, which was great.
I think he mentioned that when we were talking on his the broadcast I did with him. Yeah.
Yep, because he mentioned that in class, too. He mentioned that to other teachers, you know, see me if you think. So that was nice. And they're actually, I haven't received them yet. They're actually, I'm hoping to get them a few days before the eclipse so I can set them up for solar eclipse viewing. In terms of teaching astronomy, we're in Maine. We're in the path of the eclipse. Totality through the state is a couple hours north of us.
Which is happening when?
This is happening April 8th.
Okay.
Total solar eclipse starts down in Mexico, in terms of continental U.S., and comes across the country through Texas, through the Midwest, and then exits through Maine and Quebec. And there's the line of 100% totality is north of us a couple of hours. Where we are, where our school is located, it's still going to be 97.4% total. So we're hoping to set up some viewing and have some activities.
Cool.
Hopefully it's not cloudy.
Yeah. Cool.
But for me, the astronomy piece, and physics is physics is my thing, but sometimes I get a little guilty. I feel a little bad for physics because I'm having so much fun with the astronomy.
You're cheating.
I am. Yes. Oh. That's exactly it.
So, is there some fun exercises? Have you done something that was really fun with your kids in your astronomy classes? You know, like an exercise that was particularly.
Yes. There are many. I mean, one of them, just recently, so my semesters at school, I have one semester that's mostly freshmen, ninth graders, and then my next semester is mostly 11th and 12th graders. So I'm still working this out, changing things every day. But so, you know, teaching that the same material to ninth graders is a little different than teaching it to juniors and seniors.
Sure.
So there's a different math level and a different maturity level and a so whenever I'm able to do something with my ninth graders that I've done with my 11th or 12th graders, I get really kind of jazzed about that. I have hope. I have hope for humanity. to get to ninth graders sometimes who are still, a lot of them are still in middle school. But recently I did an activity with them where we requested images from a robotic telescope, from a micro observatory robotic telescope. They went in and created an account, requested images. They were able to pick different, there was a catalog, Andromeda and M51 or the Crab Nebula, the moon. They could pick different objects. And they had the images sent to them. And then we did we used those images to do some real live photometry where, just like regular astronomers, they received three different colored images. So they were images with a red filter, a green filter, and a blue filter. And they were able to take those images, and these are FITS files, which are not viewable in any normal, you know, JPEG or PNG viewer. These are FITS files that come from the telescope. And we walked the kids, they walked through downloading the images, getting them into the special viewer called JS9, working with them individually, the images individually, preparing them, and then putting them together and coming up with a colored image. The images that we see, that they see all the time in the news and in the media, from, you know, James Webb most recently, but also Hubble and other telescopes, you know, those are composite images. Those are layered images. Those are images that are made to be very pretty and colorized in our visible spectrum, or enhanced at least. So they were able to actually go through that process and came up and colored their own images and put them together and did some sort of real junior astronomer work.
Cool.
So that was fun. I could tell they kind of got into that.
Yeah.
There are other things, and I know Dan has done this more with his students. That was more of a computer driven activity. One of the things we do early in the course, the first part of the course is based on ancient astronomy, and so there's a little walk through astronomy in different cultures, different civilizations, going back, you know, many, many years. And one of the first discussions is it's Carl Sagan, who I'm sure you are familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Sagan had the original series Cosmos back in the late 70s, early 80s,
right?
Which was sort of my, you know, he was my Neil deGrasse Tyson, I suppose, with, you know, the Cosmos series. I was just getting out of high school to date myself. But the kids know about Neil deGrasse Tyson and Space-Time Odyssey and his Cosmos series. And so in the first episode of Cosmos, Carl Sagan, after his little introduction, he starts to talk about ancient astronomy, and he talks about Eratosthenes, and the scientist, philosopher, who came up with measuring the circumference of the Earth, or essentially coming up with the premise that the Earth is round, that the surface of the Earth is curved. And he references in the show about Eratosthenes, and I don't remember the names, and I'll probably mess this up a little, but in a well, at a particular time, the sun is, you know, shining straight down into the well in one location, but then in another location, so many kilometers away, there's a shadow created on another. You know, tall object. And so using that information, and the phrase is using only his brain, sticks, and feet, that is, he pays someone to pace out the distance from why am I blanking on the name of the well, the city that the well was in, that he brains, sticks, and feet, he determines the circumference of the Earth to a fairly well-known percentage of maybe, I don't know what it is, maybe 3 or 4 or 5% of the known value today. So there's a great activity with the kids where you can do that, and they actually are outside and with meter sticks measuring shadows, and then they take their data and they use a sister city somewhere else and look at their data at noon, and then they learn all the trigonometry and geometry and that little bit of math that they need to actually calculate the circumference of the Earth. And when kids are able to do that, and some of them have not had any trigonometry yet, or maybe are just in geometry, when kids are able to do that, they're pretty happy with themselves.
Yeah,
you know, they're pretty
yeah.
proud of themselves.
That's cool.
So that's a fun one, too. And that's an outside, that's a great outside activity.
Sure. It's great.
I could go on.
Oh, I know. It seems like there would be a wide open door for like some very cool activities for the kids. I assume that your workshop in May, was it May that you said, or April?
January to May. So the astronomy modeling with exoplanets, it started with the Modeling with Exoplanets workshop started in 2022. So it was all online.
Okay.
So it was still during that days of doing everything online. So Dan and Colleen developed it, and it was a 45-hour workshop.
Okay.
So it's not a traditional modeling workshop where you're there for 3 weeks or mm-hmm. 2 weeks.
Right.
It's 15 weeks, 3 hours a week. And it's retained that online version, that online concept. It has not been offered in person yet, but that's something that we've been talking about, to have it in a summer lineup perhaps and do an online. And then it might be a 2 week workshop or a 3 week workshop like that. But currently it's only in the online version.
Okay. And is there like resources for astronomy teachers at AMTA's website to get stuff for their classroom, like some of the stuff
there
that
are.
Has Dan posted stuff and you and whoever? Colleen.
Well, in the curriculum, right in the material section on the website, there's astronomy curriculum that came out of the first 2019 astronomy modeling workshop. Mm-hmm. The astronomy modeling with exoplanets material that is that moved forward to incorporate some of the new things that I do not believe is loaded onto the AMT website. Yet. And that is something that needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
I know that Colleen and Dan are working on that. Mm-hmm. When you do take the workshop, you do get access to a Google Drive from heaven, which has all of that great stuff on it.
Cool.
After you've taken the workshop. So,
yeah. Wow. Well, I have a feeling we could talk for another half hour or so pretty easily about all the stuff and the information that you have. And perhaps I think we'll need to do another podcast that focuses on astronomy.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah.
It's been really awesome talking with you. And you've shared some great stuff, and your personal journey has been wonderful. Let me just say thank you, Paul, for taking time to do this. It's really great. And it's been great meeting you. I've enjoyed it very much. Everybody, go to AMTA, check out. You can go to sciencemodelingtalks.com, and that'd be a great place for you to listen to Dan Peluso's podcast, where he talks more about astronomy stuff. Some very cool and interesting information from him at sciencemodelingtalks.com. And support AMTA. It's a wealth of resources. Thanks, Paul.
Thanks, Mark.
Thanks so much for joining us on another episode of Science Modeling Talks. Head over to sciencemodelingtalks.com and you'll be able to listen to any of our archived episodes and access our show notes, which include guest bios, show highlights, and links to resources that were mentioned during the interview. While you're there, subscribe to our show so you won't miss out on any of our episodes. When you join this community through our email list, we'll send you a link to a lot of awesome resources from the American Modeling Teachers Association. Okay, so that's our show. As always, remember to keep striving for excellence in your classroom.